Hello, hello, and welcome to the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's Queer Media, and we're coming at you from the capital. My name is Luke Smith.
Hi, I'm Sebastian.
And I'm Joel. I work at the AIDS Community of Ottawa. I'm the Men's Health and Wellness Project Coordinator.
I'm Noor. I work at Youth Services Bureau as a Hepatitis C educator.
Oh, nice. That's pretty exciting.
Seems oddly specific, but the more you learn about Hep C, the more you realize it actually does need its own little...
Yeah.
You do need somebody who dedicates themselves to it.
It's true. It had its own conference recently in Ottawa. It was either Ottawa or Toronto.
The way you phrase it makes it sound so exciting.
It was. Yeah. It was the... what do they call themselves now? The Canadian Centre for Gender and something... Sexual Diversity? Diversity of Sexual... Genders. It was, I forget what they're called. Formerly known as Jazz Vision. Yeah, they had their own conference, which was quite exciting. So just to explain why we've invited these incredible guests on. And we talk about safe and safer sex quite often, actually, on our show. We are going to be talking about P&P and chem sex, and P&P, I believe, is party and play.
Correct.
Excellent. This is like a pop quiz from remembering my research. And Sebastian, why is this? Why are we doing this topic this week?
He's pointing to me because I'm the one who happened across an article that was earlier on this week, and I believe it was gayguys.com. I can't remember, but it was an article that highlighted. Oh, no, it couldn't have been because it was based out of London. Doesn't matter. It was a website. They had an article, and it was about the emerging drugs and sex scene in London, which technically has been there basically since like the 50s because, MDMA and ecstasy, it originally was manufactured in the 50s, I believe, and it was the late 50s, early 60s when MDMA parties started popping up in London. It actually has a deep history. You look skeptical.
More like
70s?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But I do know that it's fairly old to mix sex and drugs. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there is a new behavior, I guess you could say, of these larger parties that are happening, especially in the gay scene. And one of the...
I turn my mic off. They're called chillouts.
Chillouts, I see. Yeah. And one of the things that really caught my eye in this article was the habit that some of these attendees have, where they'll be on Grindr looking for their next hookup while having sex with someone, and I can't imagine the sex being satisfying when they're drugged out and distracted. Like you can't,
not to jump to conclusions.
Well,
it's multitasking.
A lot of people can't walk in text. I can't imagine.
Some people are very skilled though.
Well,
being this is a lunchtime show, we're not going to go into much details regarding that particular skill,
but it just really floored me that this is a thing. The people do this. Mm-hmm. And so I forward the article to Luke here, and he's like, we gotta do a show about this. So that's what we're doing.
That's what I sound like as well. That's apparently,
yes. Everybody turns into Beetlejuice when they're being quoted.
Oh yeah, so this is exciting, and I think it's definitely a topic that is definitely worth looking into. And the reason why it came to our attention is that Lambeth Council commissioned a major study into the topic of chemsex, and we were discussing earlier that it's incredibly
chemsex being the academic term for PMP.
It refers specifically to GHB, GHB, meth, and methadone. I had it written down. I have to find it again.
Feel free to correct us at any point in time. Yeah, you are our in-house experts.
So it refers to those particular chemicals. And,
they're just bringing us.
It is methadone, and we do have the study in front of us.
Oh, yes. Excellent. Where was it going with this? God damn it.
Basically, they're almost always uppers.
Yeah.
At these parties. Not that people don't also mix things like pot or LSD or something, mm-hmm. but these activities are defined by uppers, generally speaking.
GHB is not an upper, though.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. It's a tranquilizer, isn't it? Mm.
Apparently, it's a.
They usually blend it, though, don't they?
No.
No?
No.
I know that mixing is common.
Usually, you wouldn't want to mix necessarily uppers and downers because they kind of tend to cancel each other out. Mm. And then you'd be, you know, losing out on your money for what it is that you're trying to achieve.
It can also be very dangerous and cause, like, a lot of health risks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Shall we go into the definition of what PNP is?
And sure, please do, because I feel awesome. Like I may have butchered it.
No, that's okay.
We probably both did.
No. I mean, we each have our own definition. So that's all good.
So party and play is basically fucking and using drugs at the same time, such as alcohol, weed, meth, maybe coke, etc. And party and play is also the...
It's also about specifically seeking those two activities together.
Because mm-hmm.
Sometimes people just want to hook up and sometimes people just want to do drugs. But the scene of itself combining the two is a specific thing. And when we're talking about harm reduction, which is managing the risks involved in any activity, really, that can be like driving and wearing a seatbelt
mm-hmm.
or things like, drinking and drinking beer and making sure to stay hydrated. So when we're talking about harm reduction, we're having to combine strategies that we use in sexual health and strategies that we use in harm reduction of mm-hmm. drug use, and then look at how those intersect when we're talking about party and play,
mm-hmm.
because one strategy that you might use for harm reduction specifically around just when you're fucking but you're completely sober will have to be, that'll be different when you're under the influence. So mm-hmm. you have to do a little bit more planning, for example.
And I'm guessing you don't really take abstinence approaches at all. You're just going to assume that people are going to do this. You're not going to be able to discourage them. So you may as well make sure they do it safely.
Mm-hmm. So people have been using drugs since the beginning of time.
And yes.
People have been finding creative ways to have sex since the beginning of time. This is by no means new to the gay scene. Mm-hmm. We know about poppers in the 70s, coke. Mm-hmm. Like, people have, been mixing.
Or heroin in the Victorian era.
Yeah, opium for sure.
Mm-hmm.
As well, some people still take opium. And, it's always been there. I think it always will be. The most common drug use during sex currently, I would say, is alcohol. But there's a lot of, other drugs used as well. So part of the education work that Nora and I do is around giving people more information about the effects that these drugs have on their bodies and to better plan their activities so that they can better be able to consent and reduce the risk associated with sex and drug use.
Mm-hmm. Now, the study really looked into it kind of asked, what are some of the motivations behind people engaging in this activity?
Mm-hmm.
Why would one, couple drugs, be them alcohol or something stronger?
We have an hour. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay,
we can talk about motivation soon because we do have.
Apparently, I have been cut off.
Well, No.
I'm just going to mute myself and let you take over. That's
No, I was just thinking motivation is a sort of a discussion that could happen soon.
I feel like it provides context for
why. If you don't
mind,
I would like to touch on motivation. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. No. But I'm just thinking that we're still...
I'll make it quick.
Okay, well,
So there's two main reasons that people choose to take drugs while also having sex. Part of it is obviously the fun, the trip.
Mm-hmm.
Taking drugs can enhance sensation. It can sometimes make you last longer, not as long. There's other effects that you might want to have in terms of just what it is that you're experiencing physically or mentally or centrally. So that's definitely part of the reason. The other part is as a tool. So drugs can be a tool to lower your inhibitions if you're a person who's a little bit anxious. Maybe you are carrying some emotional or other baggage with you. And this adds as a helper, as a tool to get you where you want to be in your sexual experience. It can also be a tool, for example, Viagra, physiologically,
mm-hmm.
to help you with the sex that you're having. Did you want to add something to that, Noor?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
So that's all I wanted to say about motivating factors.
Mm-hmm.
It's comparing drug use to like addiction and problematic drug use is like, you know, comparing, I don't know, like jogging to like running until exhaustion and your feet are bleeding, right? They're two very
well, I mean, it could also be anti-anxiety medication versus anti-anxiety medication abuse.
Of course.
So not everyone needs to be on, not oxytocin, that's a painkiller. Well, we'll say painkiller and painkiller abuse.
Of course. Yeah.
But the motivations actually, part of the reason why I was thinking about holding this off and until a little bit later is because it's a very involved discussion. Because, I mean, I've met multiple gay men who admitted that the first time they had sex sober was their late 20s. And this was after a very sexually active life. And some of them felt that they just, they couldn't bring themselves to do it. They had body shame issues. They had, actually internalized homophobia is not as common as it used to be. A lot of it is body shame or social anxiety. And so they fall back on this as a way of getting it done. But I can't, part of the reason why a lot of them ended up going sober is they found it unsatisfying. But it's because, like, as you say, I mean, you can use it to change the experience or amplify the experience, which is very different than doing chem sex in order to just make sure that it happens at all.
I would say that both of those options are valid. It really depends, you know, where you are and what your priorities are at the time. So I feel like, you know, if a person, I mean, of course, it's not ideal, and we would all want to have great self-esteem and meet people that treat us very well and have super hot, satisfying sex. That's safe. But, you know, if a person is, you know, using drugs as a way to help them attain whatever it is that they need to, I don't think that's anything to be shamed for either. That's where they are. I would hope that, like, these hypothetical individuals would also have access to community and stuff to, you know, be able to work on whatever issues that they're having so that they can then choose to use drugs to enhance or, you know, or not. And, you know, build those skills so that they're more comfortable with themselves and have better sex.
But the notion of community and support is actually very important here, because it's sort of like the difference between getting antidepressants and psychotherapy versus just being handed antidepressants and shoved out the door without any further help. Because if it's there to help you, there has never been anything that has ever shown that substances as a crutch without any secondary support is at all productive. And I see you fidgeting.
A support to this can be the harm reduction supplies and community itself, such as SITE, which hands out fresh needles, and different harm reduction rooms located around the city, such as YSB's harm reduction room, which you can obtain said materials that let you use safely. So that's a way you can, that I guess itself is a way to be safer.
Even just knowing that someone's there to get your, to, someone's watching your back if something goes wrong, like that alone is a very good help.
The buddy system.
Yeah.
Knowing someone's there to watch and make sure you don't
go too far or hurt yourself or make a bad decision.
That was one of the real, one of the things that really came up. The BBC Radio 4 also did an hour-long look into this, and they found that, you know, it's, and I think it's important that we really differentiate the context between London, which is a metropole of 8 million people, and Ottawa, which is barely one.
And that's only technically one.
I know. It's like, if you include everybody within 100 miles, it's a million people.
I also wanted to just challenge you on the use of a crutch for drugs. So if we say that a crutch is a accessibility device, right? Then drugs can be as well. Some people, whether they don't have access to psychotherapy or whether they choose not to access their mental health needs through, you know, the typical routes of doctors and licensed professionals for a variety of reasons. Maybe they've had traumatic experiences. Some people choose to self-medicate, and I just wanted to make it known that within a harm reduction approach, we're also looking at those choices of people to self-medicate as valid. And because we say harm reduction, we're about educating people and providing the resources so that people can make healthier choices should they choose to self-medicate.
I will be going into that in some more detail in just a second. We are going to touch on our first video, which is Scotty Dynamo, who just came
first
out.
First song, it's radio.
Oh, well, whatever. First song is Scotty Dynamo, who actually came out with this song, which is kind of neat. He is a Toronto-based dance artist. And I actually kind of enjoyed the song, and there's definitely a theme this evening. And this song was released, I think it was this week, so it's new, it's fresh, it's incredibly gay, so enjoy.
Let's begin. Don't know what you heard about me. Dance moves like a certified G. On three, take it out your seat. Better keep that beat with your two left feet. I ain't got no time for no witty pickup lines. If your crew ain't down to get it, then I'll feed a zen goodbye. You got that boom, chicka boom. You got that boom, chicka rocka, chicka rocka, chicka boom. I said, alright, okay. You ain't no Beyonce, but I really think it's time you put that body on display. Show me yours and I'll show you mine. Boom, your body is dynamite. Gonna give you a show tonight. About to put me in overdrive.
Do it now.
And again. Yep, all hands on deck. Started with a text and a 1-2 step. How low can you get? DJ, what's next? This my jam, this my song. And this might sound kinda wrong, but I hope you still look good when all these club lights come back on. You got that boom, chicka boom. You got that boom, chicka rocka, chicka rocka, chicka boom. I said, alright, okay. You ain't no Beyonce, but I really think it's time you put that body on display. Show me yours and I'll show you mine. Boom, your body is dynamite. Gonna give you a show tonight. About to put me in overdrive.
Do it now.
Show me yours, I'll show you mine. I said, alright, okay. You ain't no Beyonce, but I really think it's time you put that body on display.
2, 4, 6, 8.
Make that body shake. Make that body shake. Make that body shake.
2, 4, 6, 8.
Make that body shake. Make that body shake. Make that body shake.
Body is dynamite. Gonna give me a show tonight. About to put me in overdrive.
Do it now.
Hello and welcome back to the Velvet Studio, Queer Media. I, honest to God, blanked entirely on what our show was right then. That was embarrassing. Yeah, so that was Scott Dynamo's Show Me Yours and I'll Show You Mine. Very upbeat, very energetic, and I really struggled not to embarrass myself dancing in my seat. So that's totally a thing that happened. So today's show, we are talking about PNP, or chemsex as it's known in the UK. You know, in the Canadian context, what is it called here and what's involved with that?
I would say PNP, so using substances and having sex, going to the club using Molly, etc., etc.
And as you were mentioning earlier, Luke, there's also people using online apps such as Grindr, Scruff, Squirt to meet people for casual sex while also using drugs. So there's people, which makes sense, right? Because if you're under the influence of something, you also want to make sure that whoever you're with is okay with you being under the influence. And, you know, if they're into the same stuff, then great. It makes it for usually a more comfortable experience.
Now, there's certain things, you know, luckily we reached out to a couple of sources. I looked at the Grindr and had a look to see if I could see anybody in the downtown core, just to see if it's at all prevalent. And I found all of one person, who had PNP, and like maybe a half dozen who had 420 friendly. Like it wasn't as apparent as I was expecting.
Did you have your filters on?
Well, I started with no filter and then filtered down.
Well, I mentioned this because the actually mentioning PNP in the profile, it seems to be a little bit, I don't want to say age dependent, but it's more common in guys in their 30s to specifically list it. Or at least from what I've noticed.
Young guys will say like specifically like 420 friendly or this friendly or I don't want this or I want that. I see also more PNP and more slightly older. And then just party for people that are over 40, 50. Usually. That's what I've seen. So just anecdotal here. But I will say also in Ottawa, in a general drug use and sexual context, is a more conservative city. A lot of people work for the government. A lot of people, their reputation and their job, there's a link there. So the gay community tends to be a bit more conservative, a bit.
Would we perhaps see, more engagement with this topic in cities such as Montreal or Toronto or maybe Vancouver?
Definitely. I've noticed just myself, if I go to Toronto versus here profiles, guys tend to be a little bit more explicit with their pictures even in different cities than Ottawa, where often people are afraid of being recognized. So that also translates to, disclosure of drug use on people's profiles, if that's the medium that they're using to meet with people. Though there's some, clubs, some parties that people go to where those places are known for, being comfortable spaces for people that use drugs. And that's another way that people access these things.
So we were going to talk about the different classes of drugs and what they do. Give us a... I'm sure you've done this talk before. Give us the brief version.
So we have stimulants, depressants, psychedelics, and dissociatives. Under stimulants, we have things like crack, coke, amphetamines, meth, molly, etc. And then under depressants, we have things like alcohol, benzos, opium, heroin, and methadone. And under things such as hallucinogens, we have LSD,
cannabis.
Theoretically. Yeah, PCP, ecstasy.
Most magic mushrooms as well.
Magic mushrooms, yeah.
Because some of them are also dissociatives.
I would say so.
Well, fly agar, the classic red with the white buttons on it, like the
Mario mushroom.
Yeah, the Mario mushroom, the Smurfs mushroom. That one is actually not a hallucinogenic at all. It's purely a dissociative. And what's involved with dissociatives?
It's dissociating from yourself, from your body. So it's like you're there, but you're not there. It allows someone to be less inhibited, I guess, as well as if with things like ketamine, it can cause... hallucinations, like very, very strong hallucinations that are, it's called K-holing, and it's it takes you out of your body, essentially.
I was looking at where is it? G, it's written down here somewhere. GLB, GHB, essentially G, I think it's known as.
Yes.
GHB or GBL.
GBL, yeah. There we go. GHB is grievous bodily harm. That's what that's not what I was referring to. No, it's GBH.
Yes.
Too many Gs. Point being, that in the UK context, that's one of the drugs of choice because it's a sexual de-inhibitor.
Let's just go on.
Yes. but the problem that they've seen is that it's only now being used as the drug of choice. So a lot of agencies are not as aware in how to react to that particular drug and that particular audience. Now, we reached out to a couple of sources here with the Velvet Studio, and we found out that it's sold by the cap because it's liquid, and a cap is $20. But if you have too much, you can, like, lose memory.
You are, like, and that behind really the times. You know they're often sold either in balloons or condoms because it's a liquid? So you have your little measured out dose.
I was informed it was by the cap.
Really?
Clearly, we are not talking to the same drug dealer.
Oh, well, it's traditionally they're sold in balloons or condoms, and you just nibble the corner and suck it out. It's wow. Honestly, the way that people do it, it looks like candy. It looks like pixie sticks or something, and they're like, whoop, and they like tip it up. You know, like when you're done the freezy and you tip it up and you squeeze it out. But anyway, so if you see somebody doing that in the club, they're not eating a freezy.
They could be
in conclusion.
Freezy.
Well,
I have been to some very warm clubs.
Anymore.
I have been to very warm clubs. Anyways, my point being that navigating things like volume safely can be an issue. And if you know, if these drugs have the effect of not only deinhibiting you, but also may have side effects on memory, how do you navigate going into that scene?
Well, you're definitely like a way of reducing the harm in the sense like you don't know how much you're getting in a dose, right? Like however you take it is to like take a fraction or know your dealer or know your product. Like if you're taking mm-hmm. someone, you have no clue what it is. Like not the best idea.
Mm-hmm. I know that with some drugs, actually I went to high school with a whole bunch of dealers who specialized in rave drugs because I am of that age. I am too young to have gone raving, but I'm old enough to know people who did. And anyway, so a lot of them would deliberately sell things that were half doses or quarter doses so that people could take one and then take another one later to get a whole dose. So like you take the second one as the first one just starts kicking in so that the whole experience lasts longer. And then like as the one is cresting, the other one will actually be in the nadir and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but as a side effect for that, people who are not who've never done it before, if they take the first one, they're not comfortable with the experience. They just don't take the second. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that... I don't think that's common anymore to deliberately sell half doses. I don't think a lot of people... Like, this is not an industry standard, obviously, because it's an illegal substance, but it used to be more common.
I think it's more common now that things are just cut with other things that mm-hmm. can, like, either lessen or, like, heighten... like how strong they are.
Mm-hmm.
I earlier we were discussing kind of risk management and you know, how do you want to go into that at all in terms of the actual substances?
Actually, can we does each class have its own set of risks, or is it on a more like drug by drug basis?
Mm-hmm. Each class does have its own set of risks, and on each specific drug as well, because there are different chemical compounds that affect different parts of your brain and
have different
and
mechanisms,
body, right?
Yeah.
But just to add to what Nora was saying in terms of and what you were saying in terms of half doses and quarter doses, mm-hmm. Know your dealer, like Nora was saying. Know who's selling it to you, what's in there, ask for the dealer's reputation. And it's also about knowing the batch. So from one batch of a chemical made, or you know, even weed from another, one can be much stronger than the other one. So most people, they won't necessarily buy a quarter dose, but they'll start small. Mm-hmm. There's also drug testing kits that are available on the internet, and we're trying to get some in Ottawa as well. If you have any more questions about that, you can ask the tool shed, the harm reduction people at the AIDS Committee of Ottawa. They have some information about that. But we're trying to move towards that just because, you know, it is an underground commerce and sometimes things are cut with other drugs as well. So you want to know how pure something is before you're able to dose,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And so let's talk now about risk management and different classes of drugs. Cool. Did you want to
know your dealer? I strongly believe in the buddy system. If you're going into like a night where you're going to party and play, like mm-hmm. tell your friends, like, hey, I'm using this substance. If they're using it too, like, make sure you both know where you're getting it from. Make sure you watch each other's back. Perhaps talk about consent specifically. If we're talking about party and play, like, talk to your friend, your partner, definitely yourself about what you're consenting to that night, because substances can like take a toll on like who you're like warming up to that night, and that can be awkward in the morning. Yeah.
for sure. So I guess we'll start by talking about stimulants. Mm-hmm. Stimulants are pretty popular for party and play because they keep us awake, maybe after we've been to the club and met somebody. And, you know, they can enhance, you know, whatever is happening. So there's things like amphetamines, which includes, Tina, which is crystal meth, also known as tweak or glass, which is pretty popular in the gay scene as well because it tends to also boost your sex drive. So some people snort it. Some people smoke it, and a few people inject it as well. So if you're snorting, so putting things up your nose, it's always good to have the...
Like sticky notes or something that isn't a dollar bill, and that's something that you're not going to share mm-hmm. as well. Like dollar bills have like bacteria on them, and that can get up your nose and can cause lesions, which can also, if you're sharing, can lead to the transmission of hepatitis C from the blood that can like get on the bills.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, people often don't think about that in terms of snorting, but it is, yeah, you don't want to put bacteria right up in your nose, right?
Never do anything with money except for buy things. That stuff is gross. It's covered in everything.
True. Absolutely. Another thing it's good to keep your capillaries and up in your nose hydrated. That way it's going to reduce the risk of, you know, irritation and again transmission of stuff, and like your experience is just going to be more comfortable too if you make sure to hydrate up in your nose. I think if I'm not mistaken too, it can also help absorb because it's not just like on top mm-hmm. of your mucous membrane, but it's actually helping it cross your mucous membrane. Would that be right, Noor?
Yeah, the drips aren't fun. Like if you don't do that, like...
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And then after that, it would go into your sinuses. And some people have reported that it also... gives a weird chemically taste in the back of their throat as well. So it just makes it for a better experience mm-hmm. if you take care of your nose when you're snorting. So anything else you wanted to add about Tina?
What I found in the research that we did was that, you know, you had mentioned that it was popular in the gay community, but from what we can tell, it's very much a one-off. It's, you know, people, it's a, you know, people aren't doing this every week. It's more once in a while kind of thing.
For Tina? Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you do it too often, it has pretty high addictive qualities. So some people, as part of their risk management, they make sure not to do it too often. Use over a certain period of time can lead to anxiety and depression, and there's already such a high prevalence of anxiety and mm-hmm. depression in the gay community. Mm. Some people... as part of their risk management for their mental health, if they notice that their symptoms get worse, they choose to not partake in that particular drug.
Do you know anything about interactions, by the way?
Oh, you'd have to ask for a pharmacist.
Okay, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
I can't be too specific with interactions. I do know that Viagra and poppers are really not a good mix. And because Viagra dilates your blood vessels to Viagra with a lot of things that are uppers is actually not a great idea. However, in between specific drugs, so if we're still talking about things that can be like amphetamines, there's often amphetamines uppers in MDMA, Molly, mm-hmm. as well. So I would be careful if you're also taking a depressant with that, specifically mm-hmm. alcohol. So whenever you take an amphetamine or if you take an MDMA as well, you know, you have all of this energy and stuff. And so if you take a depressant, you feel less drunk because the other drugs are already making you at a higher energy right. level. So you could be drinking a lot and it could be really hard on your body and not realize it because you're not feeling the depressant effects of the alcohol. So I would say really limit the amount of alcohol that you do drink if you are taking uppers, because you could be taking too much and not realize it, and that could lead to respiratory depression, which is like when you're having a hard time breathing, mm-hmm. basically, and other, because the depressants don't just have side effects on your brain, right? They also affect your lung function and other mm-hmm. stuff as well in your body. So
I also know there's issues with what are known as paradoxical reactions with both stimulants and depressants, and that is certain medical conditions. Stimulants will make you sleepy and depressants will wake you up.
Mm-hmm. If you have any pre-existing medical conditions, though, we would strongly recommend you talk to your doctor.
That you look this stuff up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I only know about this because I have a couple conditions, both of which have paradoxical reactions with them. And mm-hmm. The medication that I take actually turns out to be very heavy street drugs. But like when I take them, it just makes me take a nap, whereas other people would use them as study aids, or they would take two and use it as a party drug and stuff like that. So like I've been warned by doctors, you know, if I were to consider taking drugs, like stay away from stimulants, because most of them will either, they're going to act unpredictably, but there's a lot of different people with different medical conditions. So like there are certain kinds of depression that you really should stay away from, dissociatives and hallucinogenics, because you're probably not going to get a normal reaction out of them. It'll be way more intense, or it'll be way less intense, or it'll just be so completely different that it's hard to predict. So I know that there's certain kinds of medical conditions, especially neurochemical ones.
Yeah, and that brings up the important point of how important it is to have medical professionals and community workers that are taking a harm reduction approach. Because if you have these conditions, but you're not comfortable talking to your doctor or healthcare provider about it, you might, you know, go out and take substances that actually would harm you more than the person next to you. Mm-hmm. So it's why, you know, education projects around harm reduction and around drug use, and doctors that identify themselves as drug friendly, are so important, because people are going to be taking, like, people have been getting high forever. People will keep getting high, but it's about how do we minimize the chance of people harming themselves.
Not just in the Ottawa context, but in general, how would people in Canada find out if their medical practitioners are able or willing to have that conversation? Like, how would you bring that up?
I'd really guess you just have to talk to them and see how they react, because there's no, like, list of, like, who's drug-friendly. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of people you can go to in community centers to talk about, like, I want to do drugs safely. Rather, it's I want to stop drugs. There's a lot of, like, you've got to stop now, instead of, like, let's make this healthier for you. Let's make this, like, manageable.
I think the official word from the Canadian College of Medical Practitioners, or I think that's what it's called anyway, I think the official word is you should not do anything at all ever. Except for one glass of red wine a day. Anything else is bad. But obviously, like, there are some very open-minded doctors and nurses out there. And also, actually, there's a lot of very interesting data coming out of Portugal now.
No,
you don't know about the Portuguese model? About 4 years ago, they changed all drug classes from a criminal issue to a medical issue. That if you get caught buying or selling or using or whatever, it's treated as a medical issue, not a criminal issue. And so you're given medical counseling instead of jail time to make sure that if you're doing this, you're doing it right. And are you doing it in a way that's not harming yourself and the people around you?
Yeah.
And so as a result of Portugal decriminalizing everything and making it into a medical issue, they're getting all sorts of weird data. Like, drug use is really down, especially among teenagers. People are getting hospitalized from doing too many drugs or doing bad combinations of drugs, far less. Obviously, the jails are empty, and there's no the drug cartels, that a lot of organized crime basically evaporated overnight. It's a very interesting result that's happened in all in about 5 years.
We're going to come back to some more risk management around this topic in just a few minutes. We're going to be playing Harrison Scott, who looks like a supermodel. But like, you know, those really awkward, like, 7'4" models, and it's like, they're just,
what kind of, because you know there's only one male supermodel in the his,